Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Happy Friday, everybody. It is a beautiful day here in cloudy right now, Tacoma, Washington. I hope you guys are having an absolutely fantastic time because it's a good day. We got John Todrud with us. And John, I apologize. I forgot to ask how to pronounce your last name.
No problem. You were super close. I hope you pronounce it Todrud.
Yes. Todrud. There we go. John is another multifamily guy, and they invest in emerging markets and do value add. And so I'm sure we can get into it, and I'm sure John has some good value nuggets for us. So John, thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thank you, Gabe, for inviting me. Really appreciate being here and hearing some good questions and being able to share things that hopefully help our audience advance their real estate work a little bit. It's a tough journey and like to make it fun and interesting.
Yep. And before we actually got on this podcast, John and I were talking, we live like 30 minutes from each other, which is a very, you rarely, I don't have a lot of PNW guys up here, especially ones that are this close. So it's an honor to have another fellow Seattle area guy with me here.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous place to live. So much to do. And so glad that I found this area.
There you go. So I told you before we got on here, we like to start with stories. So why don't you take us to the beginning of your story X number of years ago and tell us how'd you get started in real estate?
I took a path that I think a lot of people have taken and worked out well for me. It's not necessarily the only one to take. I started off in a career. My career was in technology, software mainly, a lot of different software roles and did well and had fun and met a lot of great people. And there's good money to be made in software. One thing that a lot of us do is we're never really that much on track for retirement. And it's not unique to the technology industry. I've seen it in a lot of other industries, but it's really the one that I've been focusing on. And I saw early on, this is like 13 or 14, well, actually, I should say before the 2008 crisis, I started getting an interest in other asset classes. You know, you have your stocks and bonds and things like that. And they go up and you feel super happy, and then they take a hit and they lose 25, 30, 40% of the value. And you think, holy cow, how many years did I just add to my work life here? And it's frustrating. And so I was looking around for other solutions. And what came back to me is what can I control? What things do I have influence on? What can I fix and make right and do better on and have that lead me to a successful outcome, a retirement and financial independence and a healthy and happy life. And what I came across was real estate. Real estate really resonated with me and everything about it checked all my boxes. So I started getting really interested before the 2008 crisis and talked to friends, and they were interested too. For various reasons, I never bought anything before that crisis. The drop came, stock market and everything else about that, the Great Recession. And I was not owning anything and just thanking myself. I was just like, I'm so glad that I had not done that, but it never lost my interest. And so I watched that crisis unfold. 2009 came, 2010. And those of us who have been in it, we really know that you didn't know, okay, everything's done and it's all behind us and it's okay to get back in investing. It was not like that at all. It was like, things are flat. Are they going to drop again? A lot of smart people said, hang on, this has more to go. And you just have to decide who to listen to. And I decided in 2010 that I think it's safe to leave the house again, so to speak. And so I started looking into the real estate market. And I found a lot of deals. Those who were looking at the time saw short sales. and a lot of great prices. And I figured it's not going to drop that much more if it drops at all. And as it turned out, it wasn't dropping. 2010 was actually a good year. 2011. And there on.
The hockey sticks started up.
Well, yeah. I wasn't looking for that kind of a thing, though. I wasn't looking for the quick hit. I was looking for something long term. Got into small properties, a triplex, fourplex, and managed them myself. And found renters, did renovations, and placed ads, learned the marketing, figured out the legal side of it, found good legal people, and got good leases. All of those things, you just have to learn. You have to have a mindset of, I don't know everything, but I know how to learn. And that's what you do at those early stages. And got good tenants, had them for a few years. They did well, sold them, bought bigger properties. And along the line, some smart people that I met said, hey, you need to go to a multifamily conference. And so invested in that, started going to those, buying the tickets and airplane flights to multifamily conferences, and met a lot of people. And that really sort of opened my mind. It opened my mind to a lot of different possibilities, learned about pooling other people's money and syndications. And this is around 2015, 16 or so that I started learning that, took classes, got coaching, and syndicated my first deal in 2017. And I've been doing that since. And so we learned that, you know, you run out of your own money after a little while. Your friends and family, they're tapped out. You got to figure things out on your own. You got to find other people. And there are a lot of people who want the benefits of real estate, from cash flow and appreciation and tax deductions, but they don't have the time or understanding or risk tolerance to go out and do it on their own. They want to join somebody who has experienced at it. And there are a lot of those people out there. And so I've spent a lot of time trying to make connections and finding people who have that interest, teaching them. A lot of them just want to do it on their own, or they want to do it by smaller properties. And I'm all about that. Helping people like you are, David. You're setting up a podcast, and it's such an educational and informative medium that we have an obligation to give back, but also it helps us all when we teach. We learn more ourselves. We learn from people who are less experienced, and that's what I thoroughly enjoy doing still to today.
Nice. Yeah, it's. It sounds like you took a course that a lot of people take, and I feel like it's a good one. You start out, you know, you see the asset is where you want to be. You want to invest in real estate. It gives you control. There's a lot of benefits to it, and so you decide on taking that path. You buy a few properties. I like that. A lot of people get stuck on the sidelines where they're just analyzing properties, looking at them, you know, maybe making an offer or two, but not actually closing.
Yeah.
You got out there, you bought some small properties. Realized you wanted to get bigger, and then you got educated. You went to conferences. Did you get? Did you hire a mentor or anything like that?
I did. Yes.
Okay. I think that's a perfect step, because then you can learn from people who've gone before you actually get into, you know, the bigger deals, doing syndications.
Yes.
So I really like the trajectory of your career. I the thing that kind of stuck out to me, you know, you've had a really long tenure in real estate, mm-hmm. been in it since before the 2008 crash. And I like that you said, you know, when 2010 came around, nobody really knew what was going to happen. That makes me think about where we are today, because so many people are saying, they keep saying that it's just going to crash. Like, we're just, you know, the floor is going to fall out from under us. But it just hasn't been doing that. And in fact, I opened the New York Times today, and it said that job growth in the U.S. exceeded expectations. And so there really is no crystal ball when it comes to real estate.
Yeah.
And so that just, you know, you take that as it is what it is, and you have to make sure that your underwriting is on point and can withstand an increase or a decrease, regardless of, you know, what's thrown at you.
Yes.
So once you got into syndications, let's talk about that first deal you did. You decided you wanted to do syndications. You got that mentorship, the education. How did you get that first deal done? Take us step by step. What were the steps you did? How'd you raise the capital? All that stuff.
Yeah, good question. So the quandary that we're all in is we hear you find the money and you find the deal and the money will follow. Or
not necessarily
what do you
true.
Do first, do you go out and find potential investors, or do you find your deal first so that you can take it to them? There's no one right answer. It's absolutely not true that if you find the deal, the money will follow. No. You have got to be doing both of these activities in parallel. You've got to be out looking for a deal. And when you talk to an investor, if you've not done a syndication, there are ways that you can communicate that this is the kind of deal that I will intend to be doing, and talk all about it. You take a sample deal, find another syndicator who is offering you a deal, and say, wow, that's spot on. That's 50 units or 150 units or 20 units or whatever happens to be, whatever it is you like. If it's in your sweet spot, say, this is what I'm going to do. It's a class C or class B, and it's in this area. These are what I'm doing. The returns on deals like this will be in this area. Is this something that you'd be interested in? And that's enough. That really is enough to get their interest or not. If they're going to say no, they're going to say it for a variety of reasons that probably won't change much in the future. You don't have enough experience yet. Or I'm looking for bigger or smaller deals. Or I'm looking for deals in this area versus that area. And those things, that's actually what you want. You want their feedback. You want critical feedback. What am I doing right or wrong? So you ask the question, how do you get started with a syndication? You have got to know people, not just people who are going to invest in your deal. You have to know people who are going to partner with you. That's even more important than knowing people who will invest, because you can't do this alone. You have to do it within a partnership. There's just too much work involved. And go into it with that perspective, is that you're not going to do this alone. So find out which people you can work with, who you can live with for the next 3 to 5 years. It's a tough decision. Don't dwell on it forever, though. Find people that you've talked to for a period of time, 6 months or a year, who've gotten to know, they're competent and they'll contribute. They'll put in their effort toward the project, and their interests and values are aligned with yours. Partners are critical. They'll also help you find investors into your deal. You've got to be talking with investors. And on the flip side, you need to find properties. You need to get deal flow. And there's 100 different ways of doing that. What worked for me is first figuring out my markets and where I want to invest.
Which markets were those? And
my markets.
When you give your answer, think of somebody who is, out there driving to work. They're thinking about wanting to get into syndications, and they need to know action items. Like, what do I specifically do? So tell us what you did, and then tell us why you made that decision.
Certainly. I want a market that's growing. Number one, needs to be growing, needs to continue to be growing. These are often called emerging markets, and there are several characteristics of emerging markets. And there are a lot of them across the U.S. Markets that are not necessarily huge, not like L.A. or New York or Chicago. Markets that have maybe been down for a little while, but are starting to pick up. There are lots of ways of doing that. I would recommend a book by Dave Lindahl on emerging markets. You can find it on Amazon. There's a lot of content about emerging markets. Find your market. I'll tell you. And the other thing is that it doesn't have to be in your backyard. I say that. But my first properties were half an hour down the road for me, and they're places I could drive to. They got big enough that I could sell them and buy other properties. And I realized you don't have to be in the backyard of your property to be able to manage it. So think of other markets around the U.S. You're probably going to have a professional property manager. That's a big focus of yours also. So markets, I like the Midwest. I didn't always like the Midwest. I started off in the Southeast. I looked at Carolinas, Georgia, even Tennessee. Not so much Florida. I like markets that are not super competitive. Florida, Texas, gosh, there's a ton of investors in those markets. There's a lot of competition for deals. The deals are going to get bid up. You're going to get outbid every single time, unless you pay too much. Crazy prices even today on properties in the major markets in there. That's not to say that if you live in those areas, if you live in Dallas or Fort Lauderdale or Tampa, and you know those markets, great, more power to you. You probably find good deals. I don't live there. I decided that's too competitive for me, so I focused on other markets. My markets, we're in the Southeast, and I bought one. That was my first syndication in South Carolina. Had a good group of general partners and found our limited partners, and we sold it after a few years and did well. Our investors did well, and we moved on. I had a hard time finding another deal in those markets, though. And then after a while looking for or putting in offers and realizing that they're not getting accepted, I moved on to the Midwest. And so the markets that I found are in real run-of-the-mill areas, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Arkansas. So what
are you buying in primary markets or secondary? Are you in Kansas City? Okay.
Yeah, yes, the major metros. I like Kansas City a lot. Look, okay. Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Louisville, those are good markets. Northwest Arkansas, several cities in there. The state laws and regulations take care of owners, investors, landlords. Companies like them and are moving into those areas of building new plants. That's one thing you have to look at is how much, where's the growth coming from? How much growth is there? Find good demographic and data analytics websites.
Give people a few of those websites that you like to use.
One of them is city-data.com. One is the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Go there and find out about job growth. Another thing is you can do a Google. In Google, do a search like Louisville population, and you'll see a little chart, and you'll see the population growth over a period of time. I've done that for some cities that I thought were awesome, and I looked at the line, and it was just flat or declining. And I thought, over the last 20 years, it has not grown. I'm going to pass. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things are very easy to do. Citydata.com has a lot of great demographic information, household income, median price of homes, population growth, and breakdowns of all that.
Yeah. Yeah. City Data. I also really like datausa.io. City Data is a little bit more granular, but Data USA, it just kind of puts it all right there. And they're the metric they use for is year over year change versus the 10-year change, which 10-year can also be useful. But I find the, since last year, what was the population change what was the economic change? Because 1 year's data, I feel like it's more relevant than 10 years ago, which is still relevant, but not as relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So you choose your metro and I'll ask that in the quick question round. After that, you mentioned that you had to build a team, a team of GPs. Everybody has their own lane. You have an underwriter, a due diligence, somebody who runs a due diligence, somebody who does the asset management, somebody who does the capital raising. Which lane did you choose?
I started off thinking I'll do everything. partners to fill in the areas that I can't do. I mean, really, I'm qualified to do everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but after having done it for a while, I'm not qualified to do a lot of those things. I'm not good enough. And so I figured, well, okay, maybe I should improve in all those areas, but that's not a good thing to do either. So I focused in certain areas. My areas in sourcing the deals, finding deals. I talk to brokers, have a lot of broker relationships, have conversations with them, and I'm talking with them on a regular basis. And I'm getting whatever they come up with. They might have listed a property. They might have heard about a property listed in their market. And they'll send it to me. And then the other thing I do, I have a technology background. So I'm proficient with spreadsheets. I have an underwriting model. I've evolved it over the years, and it does more than most of the out of underwriting models that I see out there. And I continue to improve it. It's something I have complete control over, so I can add things when I need them. So I'm going to underwrite a deal also and share my underwriting with partners. That's actually a challenging thing because I've got, you know, I add all these things and I'm so proud of myself. This is so complex and I've accounted for everything, but you know what? Nobody else can read it. And yeah, so
communicating that complexity is difficult.
Yes. Yeah, so I have to refine it so that it's, I can communicate it. And I've done better at that over the years. I'll do that. I'm not so great at asset management. I join in that part of it because I enjoy it. Investor relations, same deal. I can do it, but my partners will do that also. My partners will also source deals and underwrite deals. They're good at those things. And then the big one, capital raising. I'm doing that also. Everybody part of my deal. All our partners are involved in that. And so that's a huge deal. And I'm trying to get better at it.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you guys, you're all a jack of all trades, but you kind of focus in on one specific talent that you can give to the team.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, hey, I just took a peek at the clock. It looks like we have run down the time. So it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Starts with education. Could be any form of education. Could be books. Could be YouTube channels, Netflix shows, whatever you want. Just give me two of them. I need one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate specific.
General life wisdom podcasts. I'm a big fan of podcasts.
So give me one podcast, not just a
channel. Okay. Yeah. The one that's been most helpful for me is a fairly new one. Very experienced guys. It's called Drunk Real Estate.
That's fun.
Yes.
All right.
It's entertaining. These guys are super knowledgeable.
Very cool. And so that's for real estate. What's your general life wisdom, or is that general life wisdom?
General life wisdom. I am getting that from books more than anything, I think. Right. I buy books that teach about certain topics like that focus your mind. Like one of them is Living with a Seal. Living with a Seal. It's about a Navy SEAL, David Goggins.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of he's been.
I was thinking like an animal SEAL. I was like,
yeah. The things that he taught. I mean, those guys go through Navy SEAL training, and they're Navy SEALs for a little while, and you're thinking, oh, they're big brawny men, and they go in and do very dangerous missions for our military. But they're a lot more than that. They are very smart people with insights that are profound.
Yeah. Yeah. David Goggins he's an interesting character. He's always like yelling at you on the, you know, social media stuff. It's interesting.
Yes.
All right. Next question is for your younger self. So let's go back to the John who was just looking at that market back in 2008 thinking, is now the time to invest? Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Don't be afraid to walk away. I was afraid. I was super afraid to walk away. And I was thinking, what's this mean for my future? I am clearly missing out here. And two or three years down the line, I'm going to be so sorry. And I'm going to think, wow, I'm in the same rut I was in then. I really need to take action. But another piece of me said, not the right time. And that's ultimately what happened, but it was close. It was a battle between the little birdie on the right shoulder and the little birdie on the left shoulder.
All right. So don't be afraid to say no. I like that. All right. Next question is, we already kind of mentioned this, but you gave like a major market. We're talking, I'm going to ask about individual cities now. So give me one U.S. city, one U.S. metro that you're most excited about investing in today.
Yeah. Good question. And really, you can look at a major city like Kansas City or St. Louis or Dallas or any of these. And there are a lot of large submarkets around them. Oklahoma City. When you learn about one of those major metros, you're talking to the brokers and you're doing your demographic research. They're telling you these parts are good. These parts are not so good. Every major city is like that. And so I look at a city like St. Louis. Well, I'll keep the answer short. St. Louis, for example, is a high crime city. Well, it's not. There are different areas that are not so high crime. I look at Kansas City. My favorite area around Kansas City is south of Kansas City, the Overland Park, Lenexa, Shawnee, Lee Summit areas. They're outstanding. They're nice new growth, and a lot of people move into them. And clean areas and very pleasant places to live. It might be a little on the expensive side, but if we're investors, then we want attractive areas like that. That's one of my favorite.
All right. So St. Louis, was that your metro?
I'm sorry, Kansas City.
Kansas City.
I use St. Louis for an analogy, but Kansas City, yes, south of Kansas City, Overland Park area.
Yeah. Yeah. Kansas City is a great metro. I really hate that Missouri is a non-disclosure state, so you can't see, you can't see solds on market. I'm just talking single family here. We also do flips. Kansas City is that was just a side rant. Kansas City. Yeah, is great. All right. Next question is about finding deals. You've already mentioned that you are you're one of the guys in your team that goes out there and looks for deals. So, what's your favorite way to generate leads and find new deals?
Brokers. I talk to brokers. Yep. Yes. And I've got to be fairly specific with them and follow up with them. That's the key. Get them to know you. Call them again in 2 or 3 weeks. Say, remind them who you are, what you're looking for, and then do it again. And after a few months, they'll know you pretty well and you'll hear from them.
There you go. All right. Second to last question. This is about lessons learned. Not every deal goes the way we expect it. A lot of times a wrench is thrown into the mix and things go a little sideways. But in those deals, that's where we learn our biggest lessons and we can take them on to the next deal. So what was the deal that went a little sideways for you and what was the lesson you pulled from it?
One deal was I was seeing an increasing amount of I wouldn't necessarily call it deferred maintenance, but repair items, repair issues that just kept cropping up. This is a few years ago, and it was frustrating. And then my tenants started calling regulatory offices in the local city, and the city was contacting us and saying, "We heard about this problem. You need to fix it right now," and jumping on us. It felt overwhelming. And I thought it was unjustified to a certain degree, but they were not completely issues that I shouldn't have fixed. What I got out of it is that the thought crossed my mind that what about selling the property? Then I realized it's going to be perceived as distressed property, and I don't want to do that because I'll lose a lot of money. I ended up finding the money to make the repairs, and I accelerated the repairs that got them done, and we got past that. Then not long after that, I was able to sell the property for a lot more than what I expected because it was in good shape. And so the lesson is don't let those issues languish. Water problems in particular. I mean, that's anybody who's had any kind of buildings to maintain, water is the bane of their existence. Fix water problems immediately, any kind of leak from the roof or anything else. But everything else, just don't let them languish. That's what pisses people off. It causes tenants to take additional steps on their own. Get the problems fixed right away.
Yep. Take action quickly. That is a good lesson. And I also like that. I think the second lesson in that story is that you need to have more capital on hand than you think you do. Because if you run into a problem and you don't have the capital there ready to solve that problem, it can turn into a bigger problem. And so you need to have, capital reserves in the bank account. I know you want to invest those capital reserves in another property, but don't do it. Keep it in the bank account for when issues arise like this that you need to address immediately. And you will not be sorry that you did so. So yeah, good lessons. That leads us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. This is a two-parter. Where can they find you? And then when they reach out, what can they expect?
Two places, two ways they can find me. The easiest way is the website learnaboutapartments.com. It'll lead you to my website, or email me directly, John, J-O-H-N, at cardinaloak.com, C-A-R-D-I-N-A-L-O-A-K.com. And what you'll get is a follow-up with inquiries. I am very interested in learning about people because that it's only in that way that I can help you. I want to learn about what your interests are and see if maybe we can work together. And questions that you might have, glad to share what I know and help you along in your journey.
There you go. You guys really lucked out on that that URL. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Well, that wraps it up, John. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thank you, Gabe. Appreciate it. It's been
absolutely
fun.
For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions, reach out to me, Gabe, at therealestateinvestingclub.com. If you want to support the show, just give us a like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. Other than that, hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.